Well, on Robin Hood Radio today, we are welcoming an author, Peter Matheson Wheelwright. And when I took a look at some of the information on Peter as an author, the thing that interested me about this, the book we're going to talk about today, is that many years ago, I lived adjacent to the Ashokan Reservoir, and happened to live there during a time where we had an incredible drought. And I was able to actually get out there and walk in the Ashokan Reservoir and see history as it was before the reservoir was built. Now, what's different about this, the book that we're talking about today is called The Doorman, and it's by Peter. And for Peter, first of all, welcome to Robin Hood Radio, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Marshall. Happy to be here.
The doorman doesn't really indicate what the book is about, but what's great about this is that my experience is not at all like your experience. You're talking about the construction of it, of the final reservoir in that chain of reservoirs that feeds water into the metropolitan area.
That's right. Yes, the Schoharie Reservoir.
Mm-hmm. Now, and the doorman connection to this is that that's where some of this information came from, this person?
Well, the story is about these unusual events that took place around the construction of the Schoharie Dam. But it's narrated, and that was, you know, the early years of the 20th century. But the story is told by a doorman in New York City who works at a building next to the Central Park Reservoir. So which of course was, you know, one of the early, it was Lake Manhattan, and was the first sort of official body of water feeding the city. So there is a kind of a link for the doorman, who happens to be the grandson of the of a woman who was involved deeply in some of the events at the Schoharie Reservoir while it was being built, and the woman is actually is a real person. Her name was Winifred Goldring, and she was a paleobotanist and geologist at the State Museum of Albany. And during the construction of the Schoharie Reservoir, during the construction of the dam across the valley, there was a discovery of fossils in the stone quarries. And she was against all odds, I should say. She was a classic early example of the difficulties for women in science. But she did manage to get herself there and make the identification of the fossils, which turned out to be the remnants of a Devonian period forest, which was particularly significant because that was the moment in time, back in deep time, when oxygen began to flow into the atmosphere and lungs were made possible. It was the point at which we emerged from the seas with our gills and acquired lungs to breathe the air, essentially opening a path for humankind. So it was a very big deal discovery.
Now this book is full of facts, but it's also a kind of a mixture of fact and fiction turned into the story.
Yes. The story actually follows three generations of interwoven families from the town of Gilboa, which was the town that the city had acquired by eminent domain, and which now sits underneath the waters of the Schoharie Reservoir. So it's the story of the flooding of the town of Gilboa, their attempts to resist the city to save their town, and this odd juxtaposition of a internationally significant fossil discovery. So you had the science community from the all over the world trying to stop the dam, and these local townspeople in Gilboa trying to stop the town, and it was a kind of convergence of you know, different needs and desires and aspirations and so on. And so the book traces the sort of fallout from these events in 1917 through the three generations down to the to 1993, where the doorman is telling the story. And 1993 is significant because that was the year the Central Park Reservoir was decommissioned, taken offline, and is now, of course, the Jacqueline Onassis Reservoir.
What we're talking about is the book The Doorman by Peter Matheson Wheelwright. And I think what's interesting, more interesting about this book, maybe it's because I live near a giant reservoir like that and it interests me, but I think in general, something like that today would have been stopped. And I think there would have even been problems with the Ashokan Reservoir. It's a story that goes back to 1917, but it is as current and as fresh and as pertinent right now as it was back then.
Oh, I think, yeah. I mean, for different reasons, of course. Our attitudes about the environment, about evolution, about climate change and so forth are quite different now than they were back then. And I think you're right. There would have been more of a brouhaha around trying to save the fossils and you know, save the valley and so forth. But it didn't happen.
So now, did anything surprise you in your research in putting this together that truly surprised you, that you didn't expect?
Well, I read a very brief something in a local newspaper about this fossil discovery and this woman who had made the identification. And I just became really intrigued by her. So I ended up going to the State Museum in Albany, where the paleontology collections manager, a lovely woman named Linda Hernick, who knew everything about Winifred Goldring, she let me into the archives, and I was able to read all of Winifred Goldring's correspondences. And she was a remarkable woman, just absolutely tenacious in a field that did not like women around. And she, so I have a lot of the dialogue in the book, actually, is taken from her letters. You know, her grumbling about the man and the degree to which he was patronized, and you know, they didn't want her to go to Gilboa to make the identification, but she was feisty. She carried around a pistol. She had a pistol, and she would ride around in a sidecar of a motorcycle with her male assistant who did all these drawings. So all these aspects of her remarkable life are in the book. And she, in the end, not only survived, but flourished and became the first female president of the United States Paleontological Society. And she was also rose to become the state paleontologist for New York until she retired in the late 50s. She passed away in 1971. But so I've sort of reimagined her life as I've drawn from the letters and the difficulties she had trying to save the fossils and trying to save the town and the different families that she was involved with romantically and so forth, and the offspring from those relationships, the next two generations down to 1993.
Once again, we are speaking with Peter Matheson, and the book is The Doorman, which, by the way, is being released in February. And it will be, I would figure, it'd be available every place like books are now. Let's get a little bit about you. You had a previous book called As It Is on Earth. Now, this, I think, probably goes to your history, which I haven't gone on, and we should talk a little bit about your background. You're a writer, architect, educator, professor emeritus at the New School of Design in New York City. So how did all that lead to you writing and to writing the books?
Well, as you noted, my My full name is Peter Matheson Wheelwright, and I am indeed the nephew and namesake of Peter Matheson, the writer who, three-time National Book Award writer. He was a very big influence in my life. I was close to him. I always sort of liked reading his stuff and the idea of writing. But my grandfather was an architect who was also a big influence. And I ultimately became an architect first, practiced for many years, and then taught at the New School. But I always wrote mostly academic stuff initially, nonfiction. But my heart was yearning to write a story. And I went on sabbatical. I stepped down as the head of the School of Architecture at Parsons School of Design and wrote this first novel, As It Is on Earth. And I sent it to my uncle Peter, and I was shocked because he was very nepotism averse. You know, it was sort of you do it on your own. But he really liked the book, sent it off to his agent. And the book went on to pick up a Penn Hemingway honorable mention for literary excellence. So it was a great validation. I never looked back. I just started to write.
Your story rings true because most people nowadays, if they went to their parents and they said they were going to become a writer first, most parents their eyebrows would rise and say, what about all that money on education? But you actually had a balancing act in your family where you could actually start off and love to write, but also do something that provided some sort of income and some sort of stability, and then move on to it. I think it's a great story in itself by itself.
Yes. Well, you know, there's this fabulous New Yorker cartoon of two older men meeting on the street, and one of them greets the other and says, "Hey, God, wanted to see you. What you've been up to?" And the other guy says, "Well, I'm writing a novel." And the other guy says, "I'm not either." That's what it felt like, you know, as I moved into my third career. You know, he's an old guy, he's going to write a novel, sure.
Yeah. So
but I did. I wrote a couple of them.
It's obviously you are really concerned about the environment which we live in.
Yes.
Yeah. And what's great about that is it ties in, especially nowadays when you think about it, maybe not 20 or 30 years ago, but the environment we live in goes from everything from what you're talking about to architecture and to how we live. I'll never forget when we built a log cabin in the house years and years and years ago. A guy came out to set the land, and he said, "You don't want to clear too much. Keep the nature around you, and if it encroaches on you, push it back to where it started. But you keep the land around you." It's as an architect that also must have fit into your lifestyle.
Oh yes, absolutely. Not just in my practice, but in my teaching. You know, I taught in the graduate program of architecture there at Parsons, the New School, and my area of expertise really was around environmental issues, environmental philosophies, the relationship between nature and the city, and so forth. So yes, that was the sensibility in my family, the Matheson side of my family. My uncle Peter, of course, and my grandfather, who was an architect, actually was the vice president of the National Audubon Society and a trustee at the Museum of Natural History in New York, and set up conservancies all over the East Coast. So, you know, this is, and my brother Jeff is also a environmental science writer. He writes nonfiction and a journalist. So it's my brother's another brother's an ornithologist. Yeah, so we're chock-a-block full of sentiments about the natural world.
I'm Peter Matheson Wheelwright is our guest. Once again, the latest book, which is going to be released in February, The Doorman. I just, you know, sitting here speaking to you and looking at has this book turned out the way you thought it would, and have you had any pre-reviews on the book from people that have looked at it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, I've had some really lovely early praise. And I mean, if you go to the book's website, I think peterwheelwright.com, you can read all of the early praise for the book. The book it's a complex book. I mean, when you write you're telling the story of three generations, you're going to have a lot of dramatis personae in the book. And indeed there are. There's a lineage chart, a family tree in the book to help the poor reader keep everybody straight. So it was, it's a complicated book. And in truth, the way I wrote my first book and the way I wrote this book was based on a sort of tactic that I heard John Irving say once, that he knew the last line of the book and then he wrote toward it. And that's sort of the way I write. You know, I knew how this book was going to end, but I didn't know how the hell I was going to get there, until I arrived and it was done.
Once again, The Doorman by Peter Matheson. Now, once again, the website is peterwheelwright.com, peterwheelwright.com. And the book is going to be available in February. And you can find out more information, not only on this book, all about Peter and other books on his website. I want to thank you for joining us this morning here on Robin Hood Radio. And I'm looking forward to reading that book, because like I said, I got so involved living right next adjacent to the Ashokan Reservoir. It's going to be interesting to follow the history and the storyline that you put in this book.
Well, good. I hope you enjoy the book. It drops on February 1st, to be exact.
All right. Well, people can look for it then. And of course, it'll be in local bookstores as well here in the Harlem Valley, the Hudson Valley, and in Millerton and Oblong Books. But once again, Peter, thanks for joining us today, and continued much success in your writing.
Thank you, Marshall. Happy to have been with you.